Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. The pandemic has really emphasized the importance of strong leadership, especially when it comes to leading the health agenda of a country. Getting the public health leadership right is crucial, as quite simply, good leadership in the health portfolio can quite literally be the difference between life and death for many. The incoming health minister will not only be dealing with a healthcare system forever changed by the pandemic, but will also have to fight to reverse decades of underinvestment in the face of expected tough economic headwinds. So who is up for the task? Let's ask our guests. First up is Professor Dr. Sharifah Izzat Wan Putih. She's a specialist in health economy and public health at University Kebangsaan Malaysia. Dr. Izzat, thank you for joining me on the show today. The health portfolio is not an easy one to lead, as the past couple of years have really shown us. What do you think are some of the considerations that really should go into getting this minister pick right?
Right. Thank you very much for the question. I think this is a very challenging times, not only because of the recent pandemic, and we are expecting future pandemic as well, but we also have an existing non-communicable disease pandemic at the same time. And this is happening where you have the forefront of all issues. You have the financial issues and things like that. We need a strong leader, not only a strong leader, but a strong leader that knows where to put the money to. Because in the sense, you have only so much money and you have to make sure that the money really goes down and trickle down to the community or to the population. And this is where leaders that knows, you know, not only public health, but where to make sure that the money is spent efficiently, that is an issue.
Right. So we've had health ministers without a background in medicine or even in science before. Do you think it's better to have that professional background in medicine? Because I'm wondering, does that get the buy-in? Does that get the respect of the civil service within the Ministry of Health?
Well, it is a tradition to have a health minister that basically comes from the health side or a medical doctor. But we have seen the progress or the track record of our previous health minister, Mr. Khairul Jamaluddin. I think that he has shown a great example as a leader in health, even though he himself is not a doctor. But me, personally speaking, I would prefer someone who has a medical or health background to lead the health sector as a minister.
You mentioned that a good leader in this portfolio should know where to put that, the limited money that's allocated for the Ministry of Health, should know where to put that money. That information probably takes a while to uncover. Someone coming into this portfolio, likely a new person coming to this portfolio, may not immediately know where to put that money. How is that knowledge gained?
Well, the first thing is probably experience, but of course, within the Ministry of Health, we have very strong existing leaders. Example, our DG, our esteem DG. Of course, you have other leaders as well in the health sector and also from the medical side in the Ministry of Health. They are in the best position to actually advise our minister on where to allocate the money and where the budget should go. But it also needs to come from people in the ground, basically people who are living with the population, community leaders, CSOs, NGOs who are able to sort of discuss or to advise where the money should be spent. Because in the Ministry of Health, of course, they are, you know, intertwined with health in the population, but it is also good to have someone coming from the outside to advise the minister and also their leaderships on where the money should go and be spent efficiently, because this is very important. In nowadays, the money is not enough, and you need to make sure that the money actually goes down to the population, it goes down to the best treatment, to the best services, but also in a more cost-effective manner.
Right. The issue of funding, Dr. Izzat, I mean, I mentioned in my introduction that this new minister will have to reverse, you know, decades of underinvestment, and we are, you know, expecting a tough economic year next year. How big of an issue will funding be? Do you think it is likely? I know Khairul Jamaluddin previously had emphasized the importance of ensuring that, I think it was 5 to 6% of the GDP is allocated for public health. How big of an issue is funding expected to be? How big of a challenge is funding expected to be for this incoming minister?
Well, you do point to the right direction, Marissa. We are chronically underfunded and we need more budget. But the issue is that the budget has been increasing year by year to the Ministry of Health. And the issue is that not only that we spend less than 5 to 6% of the GDP to health, but also we need to spend more efficiently in certain areas of priority. When I mention certain areas of priority, now this changes with decades of healthcare, of services, of transformation. Example, the priority areas in health nowadays would be communicable disease, non-communicable disease, including things like mental health, including like the elderly population, aging population, delivery of services to the children, the issue of malnutrition and maldistribution of nutrition. And you can see that some of the issues or reports coming from, UN and so forth, looking at some of the issues of malnutrition among the urban population, the children in the urban population or the people who are living in poverty. So these are some of the areas. How are we going to protect our population? We have the PKR B40, we have some social protections for the population, but is this enough? Are we able to do more for the population? And where does this funding come from? The previous health minister actually talks about some of the healthcare reform that are going to be sort of exercise, things like national health financing, some sort of insurance for the population and things like that. We are following suit in certain other countries as well. So are we able to actually move this forward? Are we able to move the agenda of healthcare reform, looking at some of the better, more efficient ways of financing, more equitable ways of financing the population? At this point in time, we are not doing enough in the health promotion. We are not doing enough in the health education. We can see that a lot of people are illiterate about health. Health literacy is basically low. They are not able to take care of themselves. Self-care is one of the most important things going forward. We are not able, if we are chronically underfunded and we are going to be subsidized the whole time, we are not able to take care of our population. They have to be literate about their health and they have to be able to manage their own health as well. And of course, coming from the government, it is basically their public goods. We need to protect our population in the sense of immunization, vaccination, providing good health, clean water, and so forth. But what else can we do for the population? And this is where a budget should come more into the public health sector. Things like the primary care, they are the more cost efficient ways of managing patients in the population themselves. And at a low cost. So this is very important. Even WHO has pointed out that this is one of the most important things coming from a middle income and also a developing countries, but also middle income. We need to make sure that primary care is strengthened and make sure that we are able to screen and also protect and treat early our patients so that they don't actually progress into complications and more severe cases in the wards later on.
Well, yesterday, Dr. Izzat, yesterday I spoke to environmental activist Mina Rahman. We spoke about the environmental portfolio, and in that conversation, she pointed out that climate action should be seen through the lens of economic development. So it should be under the EPU. This kind of thinking where health should not be seen as just under the health ministry, but rather a kind of the lens of all of government approach. How might this be an opportunity, this incoming health minister, how might there be an opportunity to make sure that there is more to health than therapeutics, but rather looking at all the social determinants of health, preventative healthcare? Where do you see possibilities?
Right. You have mentioned one very important point where the EPU comes in, and we have actually mentioned this not only myself, but a few other partners as well in our healthcare reform. We have mentioned that EPU should come, financing should come under the Ministry of Finance and so forth, that one of the ways to go forward is to be going hand in hand together with the Ministry of Finance and not only on the purview of the Ministry of Health. This is important because if we are going to go forward for the healthcare reform and also healthcare financing for the population, who is going to do the reimbursement, who are going to be able to sort of manage. And in some countries, this is done together with the Ministry of Finance. And I think this is one of the way forward, that we have to work hand in hand with the Ministry of Finance. It could be a department under the EPU. It could be a department specifically under the Prime Minister's office that overlooks or oversees this execution goes very well. Executed so that everybody actually are protected in that sense. The social protection needs to be enhanced. We need to protect our population who are vulnerable. At this point in time, we have divided so-called into the M40, B40 and the T20. But we have to look further on how are these being delivered to the healthcare and to this population. Are we doing enough for that population? Do we have to do better? Because if we are going to depend on the financing of the healthcare, basically through the tax-funded system, we are not going to sustain this for the long run. It has to be together with the EPU. It has to be together with some sort of new innovations and new financing scheme, including the insurance that can be done in the so-called national insurance or social insurance, where a lot of the budget actually comes not only from the population, but also come from the state and also from the government. And it goes back to the population where there's some sort of premiums that's going to be covered for the population. Now, this has been done in certain countries. And some of the countries that have done this recently includes Indonesia, Thailand. So this is not something which is very weird. This is not something which is very alien to us. This is something that we can emulate. But the problem is that we need a strong leader to move this forward.
Dr. Izzat, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it. That was Public Health Specialist Professor Dr. Sharifah Izzat Wan Putih. A quick break here and consider this. We will be back with more on this topic. Stay tuned. You're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome back. If you've just joined us on the show, we're discussing the health portfolio today, what it will take to fill that role successfully. Joining us to discuss this further is Azrul Mohamed Khalib. He's the CEO of Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy. Azrul, the Prime Minister has said he aims to keep this cabinet, you know, lean, which could mean ministers doubling up on portfolios. I found it quite interesting that the Galen Centre had proposed one minister for both the Ministries of Health and Women, Family and Community Development. I was wondering whether you could begin our conversation there, explaining why you think this institutional arrangement would make sense.
Well, you know, thank you, Melissa. You know, the issues that face the government today are quite significant. And it's not just the government, it's Malaysians overall. And the Galen Centre has identified four critical issues that need to be addressed when we talk about improving the general health and well-being of Malaysians. And that is that are four healthcare, financing, non-communicable diseases, mental health, and the aging population. And we can't simply afford to keep kicking the problem down to another government to solve, or worse, pretending that these issues are not relevant to the electorate. So she or he, for the health minister, has a lot to do on day one. But the problem here is this, is that many of these things need bold action, and it requires a lot of reforms that need to take place. And we need to be able to think out the box and be bold. And because of that, we feel that we need to be able to look at health and the well-being of the population to be much more holistic and broader. And so we should take a leaf out of some countries like the UK, the US, Japan, and South Korea, which have already gone ahead and integrated their health and social services into basically one minister holding both portfolios. So for Malaysia, we recommend that we have one minister, say for a minister, the name of the minister would be the Minister of Health and Social Care, to be taking care of two ministries, the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Women, Family and Community Development, so that we can have a holistic overview and action and response towards the issue of health and social care. And we saw during COVID-19 that we need coordination, that we need the proper understanding or delivery of services to support people to live healthy, independent and dignified lives, and which improves outcomes for the population as a whole. So everyone should receive the right care in the right place at the right time. And COVID-19 has basically demonstrated to us the value of integrating both portfolios. And we say that one minister can do both.
Right. You mentioned that, you know, some of these reforms require very bold, very strong leadership. We know what happens when a government is weak. It translates to scared, indecisive action in terms of policy. So given that this administration is coming in with what they're saying is a supermajority, are you expecting this administration to be bold enough to make some of those really difficult decisions?
Well, Melissa, you know, I think we have no choice here because we need to be able to look at the next 10, 20 years. And if we are going to be able to address many teething problems, such as non-communicable diseases, which takes up 70% of healthcare expenditure, and the aging population, which we have neglected over the past few decades to the point that we are ill-prepared and have even failed to prepare for, we need to be able to introduce reforms that I would consider eye-watering, you know, things like consideration of adopting national health insurance, which I think Prof. Sharifa mentioned earlier. And these are difficult, but they are necessary for us to be able to move, transform healthcare from what it is right now, which is sick care, towards much more holistic and preventive care. So we need to be able to get that done. And because the Prime Minister has really indicated that he wants a smaller cabinet, and we feel that this is an opportunity where we leave the ministries as they are, but we have one guy having two portfolios. And I think that's
doable. Or woman.
I had a female minister of health yet. I'm definitely hoping for that, Melissa. She or he will definitely have big shoes to fill in from the three previous health ministers of Dr. Zul, Dr. Adam Baba, and KJ. So there's a lot of things that need to be done.
Do you think that Karin Jamaluddin should be reappointed health minister through a senatorship?
Well, you know, we really need to focus on ensuring that elected individuals who have become or will be members of parliament to be on the cabinet simply because of the accountability. And we need there to be the continuity that exists from some of the work that has already been done by KJ. And there's no reason why his successor should not be able to do that. And the good news is that before he left, he managed to leave basically low-hanging fruit for the next health minister to take on. So she or he can actually accomplish some major things in the first 100 days. And I call these things oven-ready policies. And there are two. First of all, is the tobacco bill. You know, there's already been a version of the tobacco bill which has already been worked on, has the agreement of a bipartisan parliamentary select committee, which has been able to get a consensus and to be able to have compromise, which is a bill that's ready to be tabled again and to be voted on and passed. I say let's go for it and vote that in the next parliamentary session. The second one is the health reform white paper. This was worked on for more than half a year by the previous health minister, and I think this is something that we need to be able to put out in the light of day so that we can act upon the recommendations in that paper. There's no point putting together a lot of people, brain power, a lot of effort into producing a publication that nobody sees, you know, and we need that white paper out there because there are a lot of recommendations in that document.
Okay, so you brought up the tobacco control bill and the health white paper. I want to touch on both of those really important reforms. But coming back to Kari Jamaluddin as a health minister, which you didn't quite answer my question, you also alluded to the good work of Dr. Zul previously, and now Pakatan Harapan being in the coalition being holding a Putrajaya. Should Dr. Zul be made health minister again? I mean, his term ended prematurely into 2020.
Well, you know, I totally value Dr. Zul's work and the amount of effort that he put in when he was a health minister. But I have to caution everyone out there who keep thinking that this cabinet is going to be the Cabinet Harapan 2.0, which is just a continuation of the earlier version. We have new challenges, we have bigger problems, and we need a fresh look at some of these issues. And perhaps we need someone who's able to work in a very bipartisan way, in a way that perhaps, you know, Dr. Zuo has really paved the way, Dr. Adambaba has done the same, and KJ has been able to do so. So I think we need to be able to look for a new person for this portfolio, especially if we're thinking about ensuring this person is able to take on both health and women and family and community development. So she or he, hopefully, is going to be prepared to work with all of us, especially those who are at the front lines of healthcare.
All right. I'm not going to ask you to name names unless you are comfortable to name names. But I do want to ask you, in particular, when you talked about the tobacco control bill, I'm wondering what the fate of the tobacco control bill will be. You called it low-hanging fruit, oven ready. I like that, Azra.
Oven ready.
But there were there were concerns from several PH MPs, I think previously, about the enforcement powers, the civil liberty issues, the economic impact, all of that. Is that likely to be, you know, a low-hanging fruit that the incoming health minister will seize upon?
Well, the good news is that the Parliamentary Select Committee on the Tobacco Bill worked on those issues before the dissolution of Parliament. And they came to a compromise. There is a recommendation, and there already have been amendments, a new version of the bill ready to be tabled in Parliament, which addresses all of those concerns and is able to be taken up. And these issues cannot wait. Honestly, we cannot mess around with the future of the people of Malaysia, because every day we are seeing problems linked to tobacco, to unregulated vape, which are causing an increase in the number of smokers, the numbers of people taking up vaping, and most importantly, the non-communicable diseases relating to all of that. So, you know, at the end of the day, I mentioned just now that 70% of our healthcare costs linked back to the treatment of non-communicable diseases, and addressing these NCDs, well, the tobacco bill allows us to be able to act upon in a very big way, in a meaningful, and most importantly, seeing the kind of impact that we need to be able to see to be able to save lives and certainly the future of this country. You know, so it's a huge burden to be placed on the shoulders of the new health minister, but I'm sure she will be able to get it done.
The health white paper, Azrul, does that transcend the vagaries of Malaysian politics, the changing of Malaysian politicians and the ministers at the top? I mean, is that going to continue forward, or was that really a KJ baby, a KJ brainchild, and will remain his brainchild? Is it going to have a life after him?
Well, Melissa, you know, just like children, they can be adopted into another family, and certainly I'm hoping this one will, you know. And the fact of the matter is that this document, this important reform document, captures so many, more than 100 years of thinking concerning health reform, what should happen for Malaysia, Malaysian healthcare, what kind of tough decisions that need to be made. It's an easy win. It is something that the next health minister should be able to recognize on the merits of what's contained in that document, so that she or he is able to have a blueprint to work out for the next 5 years or even 10 years on what to do about health. And some of those recommendations, for example, a health commission should be established to be able to carry out some of the work that needs to be done by this government. So we're not even talking about the next government. We're talking about this government, because those reforms cannot wait. And certainly, we are hoping that this white paper will be adopted by the incoming health minister and not be stepchild or, you know, orphaned as a result of it belonging to somebody else in a different party.
I think that that metaphor works, Azra. I think it works quite well. So in the couple of minutes that we have left, I wanted to bring up the question of aged care, which you alluded to in the beginning of our conversation. It brings me to the Harappa Manifesto, which had a specific section on aged care. What are you hoping to see with aged care? Because at the present, I'm not quite sure where aged care falls. If it's under the Health Minister?
Exactly.
I'm not quite sure.
And this is the problem. This is why, because there is a ping pong situation that's happening. Health is pushing it to the Ministry of Women, Family, Community Development. Ministry of Women, Family, Community are pushing it back to health. And so there is no real ownership about this issue. But the fact of the matter is that Malaysia is already facing many of the same challenges experienced by Japan, Hong Kong, and Australia, and that an aging population undoubtedly is a potential massive burden for unprepared developing countries, and that includes Malaysia. So we're not, our social protection system is not ready, it's ill-prepared, it can't cope, and the fact of the matter is that we're less than 8 years away from, I think we're 8 years away from 2030, where one in 10 persons will be 65 years of age or older, or surpassing around 15% of the total population. So, you know, we are going to face the same kind of problems that were faced by these other countries that have a large population of aged individuals. And what do we have? We have just dependence on the Asian family system, where we're expecting older people to be taken care of by their loved ones, and perhaps the private sector and NGOs. And the fact is, there are millions, 3.5 million people who are going to be above 65 years of age. So you can't push the buck to NGOs and the private sector. The government must take ownership and lead on this issue of preparing Malaysia towards supporting an aging population. We're overdue and we're already at a crisis stage when it comes to this.
Azrul, thank you so much for joining me on the show tonight. Azrul Mohamed Khalid from the Galen Centre, they're wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.